Have the Texans changed the way the NFL will do business moving forward? I'm Luke Morrow in for Reggie, alongside John Lopez and Figgy Fig, as we get set to go around the NFL here in the loop. Real quick, the last segment we were doing the question of the day, what's an excuse you hear that immediately makes you skeptical, whether it's true or not? I like this one that came along with the idea of getting your hands dirty when you claim you have a flat tire. 832 said they used to call into work, say they had a flat tire, and then they would go onto Facebook and check in on Facebook at a discount tire center across the street from where they lived. That is a great
idea.
That's
a lot of work, man.
Well, if it was across the street from where they live, that's a lot easier.
But that's a lot of work to be lying.
That's a really good one.
At that point, I had to think to myself, like, man, what am I doing?
Am I the problem?
Yeah, I'm going to hell.
Yeah, if only Facebook was still as popular, you could still try to use that technique. I don't know if it'd work as well now. And then someone on YouTube was unhappy with my take about getting out there to work in the rain or traveling in the rain.
Mm-hmm.
But they were talking about a window washing company that they have. People get upset when they don't come out in the rain. That's completely, I'm talking solely commute. Just like, you know, UPS has neither rain nor sleet nor snow. The mailmen are still going to get out there. Same idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I had a barber. I was going to this barber. It was years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to go. I was trying to get a haircut. He was like, man, I don't know. It's about to rain, man. I'm just like, what?
What are you doing?
I'm like, are you cutting my hair outside? He was ready to cancel the appointment because it's about to rain.
Cutting my hair outside.
I'm like, man, what is going on? That was when I first moved here.
Yeah.
I didn't really know much about the flooding and stuff like that or how hard it rained. But I was just like, bro.
I'm still that way. Let's go around the NFL. Did the Texans change things for everyone in the NFL because, you know, they gave out that guaranteed contract for a second-round pick? Only one other second-round pick has signed a contract. 30 of the 32 picks are currently unsigned. Is this all Nick Caserio's doing?
Dang, Nick. Thanks a lot, man. No, look. I think there's a lot to this. Not just something. I think there's a lot to this. We know Jaden Higgins, it was unprecedented, fully guaranteed contract they gave him in May, you know, shortly after the draft. Then the Browns signed Swessinger.
Yeah.
Fully guaranteed.
Which is funny because they had another second round pick that they didn't sign.
Yes.
Fully guaranteed. Or they didn't sign yet.
That's it. There's been two second round draft picks signed. And the other 30 are unsigned. And the latest one was the Chargers. Now, the Chargers reported already. I guess, are they in the Hall of Fame game or something?
They must be. I don't know.
Must be. But they reported, and the number 55 overall pick, Trey Harris from Ole Miss, didn't show up, didn't participate already because he wants the fully guaranteed contract. There's a lot to this. There really is.
The Chargers are in the Hall of Fame game, by the way, against the Lions. So, yeah, that's why. Yeah, there's going to be a lot more of these as these teams actually start to report and these players are unsigned. We're going to get, I imagine, more and more holdouts from these rookies. You know, it's interesting. I know it's not really apples to apples, but, you know, when they changed the CBA, like whatever it was, 15 years ago after the Sam Bradford deals and everything, mm-hmm. where it was like, okay, we can't be paying these guys so much, these rookies, they actually have to earn it in the league. And now we're kind of circling back where if you're going to guarantee the contracts right away, I'm sure a lot of these teams are unhappy with that thought process of 15 years ago of like, we can't get carried away of giving these guys a lot of this money where we have to make sure like you actually can prove that you are good enough to play in the NFL before we want to commit to you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I imagine, you know, that's part of the concern with these teams of not wanting to, I mean, there's not a, it's hard to get guaranteed contracts in the NFL to begin with, let alone someone who hasn't taken a snap yet in the league.
But the seal has been broken. Obviously, yep. Deshaun Watson at the highest level. Yep. Others have gotten almost fully guaranteed contracts, but those are proven stars. Now you're looking at the second rounder. I'm cool with it. You know, I always want the players to get money, and a second round pick doesn't get a lot of money. So maybe they're thinking is, you know, we're going to be around for at least 2 or 3 years. You're not going to cut us unless we're awful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most second round picks, the general manager wants to keep them around to see how they develop because they're more not like they're, you know, bad or anything, but they're more developmental. So they're like, hey, we just guarantee it, guarantee the money. It's not a lot in the grand scheme of things. So we'll see. But 30 out of 32 second round picks have not signed. Now, here's the thing. Tomorrow, six more teams report for camp. Texans, a week from tomorrow, report for camp. The Ravens, Bills, Dolphins, Giants, Niners, and Seahawks report tomorrow. If we see more second-round picks not showing up and participating, well, then you got something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think we will. I think that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
We're going to get more and more holdouts from these guys. Mm-hmm. And then I guess it also depends what happens from there. If a lot of these teams start to cave, then, you know, it becomes the new norm or the expectation for draft picks moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if teams hold their ground and it's the players who have to cave, then this is just kind of a blip. Mm-hmm. You saw what the Texans did with Higgins. Other guys tried to wield that same power. It didn't work. And now we just kind of move forward.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it kind of depends how things play out in the coming weeks leading up to the season on if this becomes like the new norm and expectation in the future, or if this is just simply some other players seeing an opportunity, trying to use their power to get that guaranteed contract. Didn't work potentially in this hypothetical, and we go back to the way things were.
Yeah, and the biggest headline was Shamar Stewart, you know, and he was vocal about it, but his was more about, I think it was the language in the contract somehow.
Uh-huh.
But I'm sure the guarantee was at play, you know, at some level. So we'll see. I don't mind it, but it is. You can point directly to what the Texans did in Nick Caseria.
For sure. Yeah. It has started a movement here in the NFL. Yeah. We'll see how far it goes. Speaking of the Texans, so ESPN, as we go around the NFL, ESPN has been doing their top 10 of each position group by day. We'll get to the quarterback one that they put out this morning later on because it's pretty interesting. But over the weekend, they did top 10 offensive linemen. No Texans received any votes in the 26 interior linemen that got a vote in this. Zero Texans received votes amongst the 24 tackles that got votes in this. So let's say the top 50 offensive linemen in the league did not include any Texans. Are you surprised by that at all?
Not at all.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. Not in the least bit. It's very clear what the Texans' strategy is with the offensive line. They're more about the five fingers in a glove than the one superstar. They've showed us that with Laremy Tunsil going away. And really, I guess you could argue a little bit Ingram. They're more about the five guys playing at a high level than having, the superstar talent, so to speak. And that's the story of the season.
Yeah.
And that's going to be the story of the season.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I wasn't surprised either. I wasn't expecting anything else. Laremy Tunsil was number 7, by the way, for tackles, for best tackles in the league, as voted upon by the 70 executive scouts and such in the NFL. We'll get to the top 10 quarterback list at 1 o'clock to see where C.J. Stroud fit in, and I think it's a pretty interesting list. We'll talk that out later on. But, yeah, no surprise here. Hey, CBSSports.com put together the 25 worst NFL coaching hires of this century. And that, of course, spans the entire existence of the Texans. We're not going to go through all 25, but I'll just tell you, number 25 is all of the Browns hires, essentially, of the last two decades. Romeo Crennel, Eric Mangini, Pat Shermer, Rod Chizinski, Mike Pettine. 24 is Nick Saban, which, just as a quick sidebar, I think Saban is very underrated. He's like a punchline as an NFL coach. I don't really know why. He had a pretty good year with the Dolphins, and of course we all know about, you know, they chose Dante Culpepper with his bad knees over Drew Brees. Things could have been completely different. But he beat Bill Belichick a couple times in the Patriots, and he had a pretty good season. I think it was the first year with the Dolphins where they like almost made the playoffs.
Yeah.
So that's just a sidebar. I think we really underrate Nick Saban in the NFL. He was only there for 2 years. Anyways, then we get to some Texans hires. Who would you guys deem would be the worst hire in Texans history for a head coach?
David Culley.
Well, so David Culley is on the list. He's number 23 on this list. Mm-hmm. But then Lovie Smith is number 22.
They have Lovie ahead of him?
Yeah.
And ahead means worse.
Yeah, 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 yeah. So Lovie Smith is the worst hire, and then David Culley right behind him.
David Man. Culley's behind Lovie's. You know,
That's a good one.
That Lovie Smith is the worst hire I've ever seen. You can
Lovie?
Throw, yeah.
Lovie?
I mean David Culley.
David Culley. Culley. Okay.
David Culley's the worst hire I've ever seen. You can talk about anybody. Who are the top three?
Let me skim down here. 4 is Josh McDaniels. 3 is Cam Cameron. who was the head coach of the Dolphins 1 year. They went 1-15. Yeah, that was brutal. That was around the same time the Lions went 0-16. Number two is Bobby Petrino, who was 3-10 for the Falcons and then left midseason and didn't tell the team. He just left post-it notes in the locker room. And then number one is Urban Meyer, who was 2-11 in that disastrous season with the Jags.
Well, they all deserve to be on the list. But you said worst hire. That's how they framed it.
Yeah.
You know, Josh McDaniels, you could justify the hire and, you know, obviously it didn't work out. Cam Cameron, I don't know if you can justify that one. It was definitely on the list. Bobby Petrino, all sorts of things going on and just a weird cat, but certainly had some pelts on the wall and probably deserving of the hire.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with Urban Meyer. You take a flyer. No.
Yeah.
I don't mean to be rhyming here. Take a flyer on Meyer. You know, but in terms of like just the worst hire, when they hired David Culley, we were all like, what the hell are they doing?
Yeah.
What are they doing?
It's a good point.
You know,
even with Urban Meyer, I'm not mad at him being the worst hire ever because that brother got fired in the middle of the season of his first season.
Yeah, but he had done some things. You know, he had done some
but
things.
But it was a disaster.
It was.
Absolutely.
I think all of it,
he
too.
He couldn't even last the whole season. At least Culley lasted the whole season.
Well, they didn't have anywhere to go. He wasn't doing anything.
And it's all the other stuff, too. Like, Urban did not travel with the team. Yeah. And then was found like hanging out with a 20-year-old in a bar. Like, it was just everything that went into it. It was so weird.
And they were expected to be good.
Yeah.
They were expected to be good.
But see, all those things of these top four and five, as he mentioned, they did things to deserve to get fired. That didn't mean they didn't deserve to get hired.
Yeah. No, we didn't look at it as a bad hire when it happened.
David Culley.
I think David Culley was like, what? We never even heard of him.
We were working together, Figgy. I came back from the introductory press conference when he was like the Texan staffers standing in the back of the room had a 1,000-yard stare. After that,
yeah,
they were like looking, like staring off into the distance, like, oh my God.
I take it a step further before he actually got hired.
Yeah,
we were sitting there. I think Aaron Wilson might have tweeted they Texans just interviewed David Culley, receivers coach for I forgot who he was. I think it might have been Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
And we was just like, no, we know that ain't about to be it.
Yeah,
and I was after a while, I was sitting there like, I don't know. And y'all was like, Figgy, come on now. Why would they hire somebody like this?
Mm-hmm.
And they eventually hired him.
Yep.
That's a good point. If you frame it that way, Culley's definitely top five. I was just scrolling through the list. You can make a pretty good case for most of those coaches of like, yeah, I get why they were hired. There's very few on this list of like, how did that guy get a job? Jim Tomsula might be one. Of like, oh, why did they hire him?
Mm-hmm.
Dave Campo might be one. Like, what were the Cowboys doing hiring Campo? And that's my guy from Connecticut. But yeah, Culley would be up there top five on that list of like, what were they thinking from the beginning?
To be honest, I was kind of shocked that Romeo Crennel made the list for Cleveland because it didn't end well, but he did have a 10-win season.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, he didn't make the playoffs.
Right.
Yeah.
But I didn't think it would. I didn't look at him as the like the worst hire, though.
Mm-hmm. They just lumped they said from 2005 to 2015, they just put all the Browns hires. So unfortunately.
No, that makes sense. That
he
makes
got lumped in there. Yeah. Poor guy. That's what happens when you coach for the Browns, unfortunately. The only other thing I want to make sure we get to here around the NFL, because this is ridiculous to me. Ryan Poles got an extension for the Bears, GM of the Bears. I don't like arrogance. I much prefer people that are humble. When Ryan Poles was hired, he said, like, we're going to run the NFC North. They have won 3 division games in 3 years. He has won a total of 15 games his team has in his 3 years. He's very arrogant. I don't know why. And then somehow he gets a contract extension out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get it, but the Chicago Bears extended their GM, I think, for another 3 years, even though they've averaged 5 wins per season under Ryan Poles.
And you are 100% right. But hey, you know, he's smart enough to have picked a guy that was trending in Ben Johnson and doing that. Ben Johnson may be awful. We don't know.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I know they're hopeful in Chicago, but why don't we wait to see how things play out before you give the GM an extension? That's around the NFL. We're going to stay with the NFL because when we come back, we feel really good, of course, about the Texans this year, their chances, their ability to win the division. But what if this one thing happens? Will you feel differently about the Texans in 2025? We'll get to that next. It's In the Loop. We all feel really good about the Texans in the AFC South. But what if this one thing were to happen? We'll get to that. I'm Luke Morrow in for Reggie, who will be back in this seat tomorrow and moving forward alongside John Lopez and Figgy Fig. You can continue to text the show, 713-572-4610. More good texts continue to come in on our question of the day, which is, what's an excuse you hear that immediately makes you skeptical, true or not? I wanted to get to two more that I saw as I was skimming back during the commercial break. 713 says, my sister works as a manager. Someone sent her a picture of their flat tire. And so her sister, the manager, saved the photo on her phone. This is a new feature with these iPhones. If you save the photo, you can see like when it was taken or when it was from.
Oh, no.
And she saw that the photo was 3 months old. So when the girl returned to work, she confronted her about it. Like, hey, that photo was 3 months ago. You said you had a flat tire. Anyways, the girl quit the job. So.
Dang. That'll get you.
Yep.
They are tagged.
And then the advice from 979 was, if you ever use the stuck in traffic excuse, make sure you take a photo of the traffic so you can back up your claim. So,
I've done that.
Yeah.
I don't use traffic unless it's
I did that a couple times.
Yeah.
I think T-Mill did that a couple times with me too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, bro, I'm stuck in traffic. Look, I'm right here by the exit.
In case you're getting, a little skeptical here.
Now you're going to have to save that photo to your phone and see when it was actually taken. Yeah. You're like, you know what? This is the same one he sent me 3 weeks ago when he said traffic was a problem. Hey, we feel really good, of course, about the Texans' chances in the AFC South, but what if one thing were to happen? Let me set this up, because we've talked about this before. I think most people put the Texans at about 10 wins for this year. That seemed to be the consensus, at least in this building, mm-hmm. and with the various people on air. And most people believe the Texans will go about 5-1 in the division, maybe 6-0 in the division, which puts you under 500 against the rest of the league, but at least you could beat up on a lousy AFC South. So here's my question. We feel good about the Texans. I do as well. We all assume, of course they're going to win the division. Why wouldn't they? Look at the rest of the division. But with the quarterback documentary that's come out on Netflix, I know Sean was talking about it this morning, and Kirk Cousins actually being like visualized, putting it on a screen, mm-hmm. Kirk Cousins unhappy. And all these articles, I saw more written this weekend. Sports Illustrated had it. Bleacher Report had it. A lot of articles continuing with this hypothetical of, if Kirk Cousins were to actually force his way out of Atlanta, if the Falcons were to have to move him, wouldn't the Colts be a good fit for Kirk Cousins? And so that's my question. We feel really good about the Texans in the AFC South, but Vegas has the Texans win total at 9.5 right now. They mm-hmm. have the Colts at 7.5.
Yeah.
If the Colts were to get Kirk Cousins, could that add two or three more wins where suddenly now you don't feel as comfortable leading this AFC South?
I think yes and yes. I do. The dynamic is interesting because we know what they've added in Indianapolis. We also know that they're not as nearly close to being the finished product that Kirk Cousins is, nor as intellectual a football player. Mm-hmm. The thing about Kirk Cousins is he's such a smart quarterback, such a smart player, understanding offenses, understanding defenses. That alone would make the Colts a bigger threat. And I know it doesn't sound like anything a Texans fan like myself would want, but I think it'd be interesting as hell in this division. I think it'd be a fun division to watch, and the division race with the Colts, who are the consensus number two pick,
right?
In the division.
Yeah, and I know we probably shouldn't compliment or say good things about the Colts, but of course, 2 years ago they won 9 games with Gardner Minshew, and Kirk Cousins, he's not going to win you a Super Bowl, Kirk Cousins, but he could certainly win you a division. He's done that before. And, if you can win 9 games with Gardner Minshew, you throw Kirk Cousins in the mix, mm-hmm. you should be able to win at least 9 games with him. And it's certainly an upgrade over Anthony Richardson and probably Daniel Jones right now.
I agree.
And even going back to that article we referenced last week from Bill Barnwell, where he ranked the weapons by team, running back, wide receiver, tight end, and the Texans, as we discussed at the time, are 14th on that list. He had the Colts 16th.
Yeah.
So there are some weapons there offensively that if you could get the right quarterback to pair with Josh Downs and Alec Pierce and Michael Pittman Jr. and obviously Jonathan Taylor, and they've had a pretty good offensive line in the past, that if you could get the right quarterback in there like a Kirk Cousins, suddenly it's like, oh boy. You don't have to worry about the Titans too much, you don't believe. You might not be buying into the Jaguars right now, but This Colts team that almost won the division 2 years ago, if not for the Texans. Then you throw in Kirk Cousins. Yeah, like I said, I don't know if you feel as comfortable or as good in that division. They become a real threat in the AFC South.
And didn't the ESPN top 10 running back rankings come out yet?
Yes.
And weren't the Colts, I think the Colts had, did they have two? No, they had one for sure. But
right.
But
let me bring that up.
My bigger point here is with the running backs being one of their strengths, and you throw Kirk Cousins into the mix, that offense gets a lot more dynamic real quick.
For sure.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really just what they're missing on that side of the football is that quarterback because they have the other pieces throughout the offense. Here, I pulled up the running back list. Mm-hmm. Jonathan Taylor is seventh. And then, by the way, Joe Mixon was ninth. And then, yeah, honorable mentions, receiving other votes. Yeah, it was just him.
Yeah.
But still, they have some pieces on offense, mm-hmm. and they're just trying to figure out that quarterback position. Really, since Andrew Luck retired, they haven't been able to get it right. But how likely do you think it is? You know, because this is all hypothetical, but you Google it. Mm-hmm. It's the number one team people point to when they talk about Kirk Cousins. Like, if he is moved, it seems like a natural fit that him and the Colts would be good for both parties. And then for the Falcons, like, it's the other conference. You could trade him away to the Colts. You don't have to worry about then battling with him for a playoff spot. But do you think we get to a point here where, I mean, look, the regular season is about 6 weeks away. At this point, do you think Kirk gets moved at some point out of Atlanta?
I think Kirk wants to get moved.
Yeah, I
agree. And I think the odds when you want to like that go exponentially higher. And from the Colts' perspective, hey, training camp hadn't even begun yet. I just talked about how Kirk Cousins, he's truly a very, very good offensive mind, not just a player. That they see an opportunity here. You know, they're also wondering about what the Texans have. Now, obviously, their defense, everybody knows, is good. But offensively, can they be the type of team with Kirk Cousins that can threaten for the division? I think the consensus, if you're as objective about it at all, is yes. You know, if they had Cousins, and I think they become a much better offensive team.
Yeah, I think so, too.
And by the way, where else would he go?
I know.
You know? What are the other options for Kirk Cousins?
I know. I'm trying to think here at the top of my head.
Yeah.
I know. Now the Steelers have Rodgers. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can make the case like maybe the Jets, who he's always been linked with in the past, mm-hmm. almost went to but chose the Vikings instead. You know, are the Jets satisfied with Justin Fields?
He was always linked to the Browns, too. But I think they got a few. I think they got like six quarterbacks.
How many do you want over there, man?
Hey, might as well take another one. It ain't going to hurt.
Yeah. Well, people thought it was going to be the Browns this offseason, right? Because Kirk was spotted.
He was at a Chipotle.
At a Chipotle in Cleveland. And everyone's like, oh, he's coming. Obviously, he knows Kevin Stefanski from Minnesota. So, yeah. Also, let's not forget, like, because of Jim Irsay's passing, mm-hmm. there's now new leadership. I don't know the conversations or the connections, but I think everyone has to feel like, we might not be safe. Like Shane Steichen, you know, when you bring in new leadership, or in this case,
that's a good point.
The daughters are taking over. Mm-hmm. I don't know what their relationship's like with Steichen or Chris Ballard.
In general, do they want to shake things up?
Yeah, right.
Work out.
So if I'm a GM or I'm a coach and I'm thinking like, ooh, maybe my seat just got a little hotter. Mm-hmm. Let me go out and actually get a quarterback that we can count on right now. I know on the text line, someone said, Cousins is ass. Relax, man. Y'all tripping.
He's not.
He's not ass, no.
He's not. He's very good.
And as I said, look, he's not going to win you a Super Bowl. I don't think Kirk Cousins is a Super Bowl winning quarterback. But all we're talking about here is, can you win 10 games in the division? And certainly with Kirk Cousins, they won 9 games at Gardner Minshew 2 years ago. Their win total right now with Daniel Jones is 7.5 in Vegas. And Vegas is usually pretty good with this stuff.
Yeah.
So can Kirk Cousins elevate you by 2 to 3 games? I think 100% he can. And that would be my concern, that if the Colts were to pull off something, that suddenly that division gets a lot tougher. Kick Rocks asks, can the Colts afford the contract? I don't know. They have $20 million in cap space, but I assume if these publications are writing about the trade happening, that it is a possible outcome, and that these teams can make a way, can find a way to make the money work if push were to come to shove.
Hell, Kirk Cousins probably will want the money to work somehow, too. Maybe if that means him going somewhere else.
He wants out. And here's the thing about Kirk Cousins. Every single time since 2015 now that he's played 16 games, at least 16 games, he's thrown for more than 4,000 yards. He's good. He's a very good quarterback.
You think he can still do that now with his age and, you know, the injuries and all that stuff he had?
I don't know, but...
That would be my only question.
Mine too, but if you're the Colts and you're sitting there, you know, with Richardson and Daniel Jones and you have a chance to get Kirk Cousins...
Yeah.
That's a risk you're willing to take.
I wonder if they don't want to do that because of Anthony Richardson.
Yeah, I think that's...
Because that could put a lot of pressure on them too, and they don't want... I mean, it's already a little pressure with Daniel Jones.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if they just trying to make that his job.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens if Kirk gets moved, but I just keep seeing these articles come out pairing him with the Colts, and it just got me thinking, like, if this were to happen, things get a lot more interesting in this division.
Yeah,
And that's the thing. That's the comparison, is to Anthony Richardson and Daniel Jones. You might think whatever you think about Kirk Cousins, and that's fine. But what we're talking about is the difference of having to start Anthony Richardson or Daniel Jones and then having to start Kirk Cousins.
Yeah,
that's a big improvement. He might not be a top five quarterback. He might not be, like I said, a Super Bowl winning quarterback, but he'd be a vast improvement for the Colts compared to what they currently offer right now.
Yeah, that's a bigger threat right now.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. You much rather have Anthony Richardson and his 50% completion percentage out there or Daniel Jones than Kirk Cousins, even, you know, 2 years removed from the Achilles.
Yeah.
When we come back, let's get to what's popping, including the Astros' first round draft pick last night. The Astros drafted a guy in the first round last night that might already be my favorite player in the organization. I'll tell you why when we come back. We'll get to what's popping next. It's In the Loop. What's popping here on In the Loop? I'm Luke Morrow in for Reggie alongside John Lopez and Figgy Fig. Some people didn't really like the Kirk Cousins conversation. This is the last thing I'll add. When he did get injured 2 years ago for the Vikings, at the time he was third in the league in quarterback rating. Might not be the same quarterback after an Achilles injury, but let's not underrate Kirk Cousins. Hey, what's popping? Astros drafted a shortstop in the first round of the draft, which took place yesterday. First time the Astros selected a high school position player in the first round in a decade, as they took shortstop Xavier, I think it's Nayans, who was going to go to Oregon State. Obviously, he's going to sign with the Astros instead, first rounder. As I said in the tease heading to the commercial break, he might already be my favorite player in the organization. He called himself a dirtbag when they were interviewing afterwards.
He's a dirtbag.
And also, when they asked him what he knows about the Astros, he says, "I know they whip up on the Mariners in the AL West," which I love that quote. He's a Mariners fan, or
went
at least
to games.
Was.
Yeah,
who went to games and knows that the Astros have run that division. He said, "I'm a dirtbag. I'm a baseball player. I'm going to do whatever it takes to win." I love this guy. Just based off of these quotes. He had a tweet making fun of the Yankees in 2022. Perfect. Sign me up. I'm all about it. I love this. I don't know if he's ever going to make it to the big leagues, but I think he might be my favorite player in the organization now.
Little shortstop. Well, not little. He's like 6'1", 6'2", but shortstop taken right there. Remember when Carlos Correa was taken by the Astros as a 17-year-old? That's all I'm saying.
Here's my other thought, and this might be a stretch.
Mm-hmm.
But I looked it up. They said the average it takes, if a guy does make it to the big leagues from high school, it takes them 4 years on average to make it to the big leagues. So that puts us at 2029. Again, baseball drafts are different. You just draft like the best player because you don't know what your needs are going to be by the time they're ready to get to the big leagues. But is this like Jeremy Pena insurance that you figure, we're not going to be able to pay Pena? Let's go get his replacement in the draft.
I don't know. I think that's probably somewhere in the equation, but You draft a player like this, 17 years old. He could be a shortstop. He could be something else. You know, at that age, with that kind of skill set, everything that you hear and read about him is, you know, all the tools are there. Could probably use a little more pop in his bat, but that's going to come, you know, with size and maturity and everything. Think about when you were 17. Your body changes a lot. I mean, it changes an awful lot.
Which, by the way, speaking of the draft, the other thing I'll mention is that they set a record. Youngest player ever to be drafted first overall, Eli Willits, 17 years old, 7 months. I know, that's crazy. Imagine being 17 years old. You're the number one pick in the draft. You get all this money thrown at you. That's crazy.
It is crazy, and it was a little bit of a surprise. I think he was ranked usually 5 or 6 overall, but they said that's the guy they wanted all along.
And remember, that's the Nationals who just fired their GM a couple weeks ago, and people were wondering, why are you doing this now before having the first pick in the draft? So this is the interim GM that made this choice. it could be very interesting how this plays out for the Nationals moving forward. And a few years from now, you might look back, depending on how this draft pans out, and be like, man, that was stupid to let the interim GM make this draft choice, and he went with this guy.
I have a random question. Is there a reason why they had a draft around this time, the MLB draft around this time? Because I thought it was kind of weird they had it around pretty much during the season like this.
I think, Luke, you would know this. You lived that life, with developing players for a long time. My thought has always, well, first of all, the MLB draft is nothing like the other drafts.
Yeah.
It's very, they're trying to make it into something. They televised it now and all that, but it just doesn't quite resonate. But I think part of it has to do with when they can declare and go back to college for the college age players and getting back into, you know, the summer regimen. In college. High school players, I don't know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's that. I don't know why they choose now. I'm sure it is that timing purpose. That sounds right.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, I mean, like the college baseball season ended, a few weeks ago, and then you want to get these guys in now, and then obviously they'll report, and some of them will start to play in minor league baseball. You'll get something out of them the rest of this year. But I think, honestly, I think you should do it this week. Like, this is your all-star break.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be a perfect to pair. They did it yesterday, I think, 4 p.m. Central. Like, there were still games going on.
That's what got to me. I'm like, damn, because usually, you know, when you watch the Astros game, you might hear Dana Brown on the TV.
Mm-hmm,
But I was thinking like, oh, I'm sure he's not doing the broadcast now because he got a draft to worry about.
Yeah, I would have done it like tonight leading into the Home Run Derby or mm-hmm. Wednesday when there's nothing going on. Instead of just throwing it in there on a Sunday with all the other
games. So did somebody tell Joe Espot, was he trying to keep up with the draft a little bit during the game?
I mean, I guess he had to know.
Did somebody let him, they drafted this guy.
Yeah.
That's why I thought it was kind of weird to me.
I think it started right after the game ended, so you probably, like, get right into the clubhouse and be like, all right, like, who are we taking?
Yeah.
I know, it's a little odd.
And a lot of these guys, once they're drafted, you know, their rookie seasons begin pretty soon.
Yeah. Which is tough for some of those guys because they just had their season. Mm-hmm. You know, they played college baseball or whatever. Now you throw them in. It's for the first time they're playing more baseball than ever before. I know kids play baseball year-round now, but not to this level. So, it's a little different. Now they join the professional ranks, and they'll be probably in Florida here in the coming weeks, and you try to get something out of them and not just completely waste
this year.
It is
just bizarre timing, though. It always has been.
It is odd.
Yeah.
Hey, let's talk about the All-Star game and All-Star weekend. We mentioned this earlier, led to the question of the day, but Isak, I should say. I used to call his games in minor league baseball, and I think back then he was Isak, but now he's Isak, so I always mix it up. Anyways, Isak Paredes not playing in the All-Star game for family matters. So the only Astro we could get is Josh Hader, and I would have no problem with him not pitching either. Give everyone a week off at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're an Astros fan, not a ton to tune into tomorrow night. Hunter Brown won't be there. Obviously, Jeremy Pena's injured. Or Hunter Brown might be there, but he's not going to pitch. Jeremy Pena's injured. He won't be there. Paredes is not going to be there. And Hader's the only guy that could actually be in the game. So not a lot for an Astros fan to look for to tomorrow night in the All-Star game.
Home Run Derby, though. Home Run Derby is happening. Your top three favorites are the Big Dumper?
The Big Dumper.
Cal Raleigh. He's the favorite. Then O'Neill Cruz and then James Wood. A lot of people putting money on are betting on James Wood, a young guy from the Nationals.
Yeah, he's got some power.
Mm-hmm.
It could be fun tonight. We'll see. It doesn't always play out how you expect. Some of these guys don't do well in Home Run Derbies. But him and the Big Dumper, both those guys could put on a real show. Yeah, Cruz, too. I get why he's a favorite. He hits some rockets as well.
Mm-hmm.
All three of those guys could potentially put on a good show tonight for the Home Run Derby. There's always that hypothetical or that theory that the Home Run Derby screws up your swing, and some players won't participate for that fear. So if you are an Astros fan, I guess that's what you root for tonight, that the Big Dumper screws up his swing.
Yeah, because they're coming right out of the All-Star break.
Yeah, it's true, yeah.
Coming right out of the All-Star break against the Mariners.
You know, the uppercut.
I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, win it.
Yeah, that's right.
Go all three rounds.
Tire yourself out.
Yeah.
Get into that uppercut swing where you're just trying to jack homers.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you come out of the break and face Hunter Brown and Fromber, you're not ready to go this week.
You're a mental mess.
So if you're an Astros fan, I guess you got to root for the Big Dumper tonight in like a Machiavellian type of way. Hope he goes all the way and then pans out for you. He's a safe. He fell one home run shy of Barry Bonds' record for most homers in the first half of a season,
yeah,
which is pretty crazy. Last thing on All-Star Weekend, the rookie for the Brewers, Jacob Mizorowski, however you say his last name.
The Miz.
Yeah, that's a lot easier.
Yeah.
He was added to the All-Star game after only 5 career starts, which is a new record. I know a bunch of Phillies were unhappy about this. I think Nick Castellanos even called it a joke.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about it? Do you think it needs to, look, he wasn't on the first team. He's a fill-in. He's kind of like the fifth option, but
yeah.
How do you feel? Do you think these guys need to earn it a little more, or is 5 starts enough to be an All-Star?
I feel for the Ranger Suarez was another one that probably deserved to be there, and a lot of the Phillies were very, very upset, as you mentioned. But as much as you kind of feel for those guys, it's what you do.
Yeah.
Baseball needs this. You have a phenom, a true phenom, throws 100 miles an hour, you know, goes deep into games, at least as deep as he can right now. He's had only 5 career starts. I think it's like 2.0-something ERA. You know, an absolute phenom. You want people to tune in and find something interesting to, you know, to kind of grasp and start watching in Major League Baseball. It's the All-Star game. It's what they want to do. I feel bad for the guys that didn't make it, but I totally get why they're bringing in this guy, because they want to get some buzz around this game.
Yeah, which is why, like, yeah. You even put – the commissioner puts Clayton Kershaw in as like an honorary All-Star.
Yeah.
That's if this used to still have to do with, although he's pitched well enough, he's earned it. But I was going to say, if it still had to deal with home field advantage, then I get some of the complaints. But now this, it's obviously truly just an exhibition game. It's it's an entertainment product. And I think that's what one of the Phillies said as well about it, is like, this is like wrestling, you know, we're just picking entertaining people. But yeah, that's kind of the point of
yes,
it all.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Yes, it is.
Skeens last year was an All-Star after 11 starts. That was the record at the time. Now 5 starts is the new record. Hey, well, what else is popping? Well, Fred VanVleet was named president of the Players Association in the NBA.
That's huge. Like, he's the dude.
Yeah.
He is absolutely the guy in charge of the NBA Players Association. I did think there's a little bit more to this that's going to get real interesting here in the next few years, because the players can opt out of the current CBA CBA contract while Fred VanVleet is the NBA Players Association president. He's going to get a lot of airtime. He's going to get a lot of pressure put on him from the Players Association, from the NBA. He's going to be in the mix of something that, you know, they could opt out of this deal in 2028. His tenure is going to run through 2029, so he's going to be in the middle of some pretty, you know, interesting negotiations. And you're thinking, well, the player NBA players already have one of the best, you know, agreements in all of sports. But you know what people always want? A little more.
Yeah, for sure.
A little more. And the story I was reading about this, which really kind of got me thinking about it, is, you know, since the last agreement, when the last agreement was signed, there have been numerous new revenue streams into the NBA, specifically digital. Gambling sites are much more partnered, you know, gambling partnerships, et cetera. The in-season tournament wasn't a thing when the last agreement was signed. So all of a sudden, things could get a little bit interesting, because I think the NBA players could maybe opt out during his tenure.
Yeah, it'll be it could be fascinating. He's the guy in charge, and a compliment and an honor to him for being named the president.
Mm-hmm.
Two last quick ones here on what's popping. Cooper Flagg already shut down for the rest of Summer League, and they're already using load management in Summer League. I'm an anti-load management guy. I just think it's really lame that it's also made its way to the Summer League now, where we're sitting these guys.
I think they just don't want him to get hurt.
In his case, yeah, I kind of get it. Yeah. But even in other guys, you know, they're sitting some games, and I don't know.
Yeah.
But that's just me. I'm old school. And then the last thing, you guys need to help me out on this, because I'm not a tennis guy. Is it Jannik Sinner? How does he say
Jannik
that?
Sinner?
Jannik Sinner.
Yeah.
First Italian to win Wimbledon.
You got your Italy shirt.
That's why I put my Italian shirt on. My paisan wins for the first time.
Yeah.
Are we, Figgy, you're my go-to tennis expert. I follow it casually. We're in the midst of kind of a resurrection of some young talent, right?
Yeah, especially with the men, because you got him, because him and Alcaraz that been facing each other for a long time.
They're like 23.
Yeah, they're very young. Yeah, Alcaraz been getting the best of them. This is the first time I want to say he beat them.
Well, he beat him in the French Open, right? Alcaraz did?
Alcaraz did.
Yeah.
But Sinner finally got him in the Wimbledon.
Did you see what happened on the women's? Oh my
God. It was not good, man. Dude, it was a.
You got double bageled in the final?
Yeah.
6-0, 6-0.
Now, to be fair, the other young lady, the American, she kind of made it further than what everybody thought.
Yeah, but that's like. That's like Broncos, Redskins back in the day in the Super Bowl. I mean, you got run out the gym.
Yeah, didn't get one game.
Not one game.
Yeah, that's tough. Yeah.
Well, Paolo Banchero became the first Italian drafted first in the NBA 3 years ago, and now we get the first to win Wimbledon. Let's go.
How about that?
Yeah. All right. Suddenly I'm a tennis fan. Hey, when we come back, you've probably heard some of the audio by now, but Jeff Luhnow did a great interview with Chandler Rome on their podcast, talked for about an hour. There's a lot of interesting stuff. We're going to get to some of the sound from Jeff when we come back and break it down. We'll do it next year on In the Loop.